Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
What you're about to hear is one of the most energizing and inspiring podcasts that I've done in the entire history of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. And that is a big statement because we've done over 100 of these episodes now, but this interview that you're about to listen to with Michael J. Sullivan and Robin Sullivan was intensely inspiring for me and has really changed things up for me in how I kind of go forward with my publishing career. So this is the first part of a 2-part interview with the Sullivans. And if you haven't already subscribed, make sure you subscribe so that you get notified when the second part of this episode comes out next week. All right, enjoy. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of The Thunder Heist, and I'm joined by my fellow writers, starting with Michael R. Fletcher.
Hi, I'm Michael R. Fletcher, author of the Obsidian Path trilogy.
Rob J. Hayes.
Hello, I'm Rob J. Hayes, author of Titan Hoppers. We'll go with that one.
Uh-oh. He does that. He freezes in mid-conversation. He'll reboot in a couple of minutes.
Okay, so that probably didn't come across as a...
It wasn't lag. He just stopped.
Yes, that's what he said.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's right.
I'm Dirk Ashton.
I am Dirk Ashton. Ashton, author of the Paternus trilogy.
And we are joined by 2 very special guests today, Michael J. Sullivan and Robin Sullivan. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. We have to introduce ourselves too.
Do it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I hate introducing myself. Okay, so I'm an author of Prior Revelations and what's the other one? Legends of the First Empire?
And The Rise and Fall.
So basically, I'm a science fiction fantasy author, but she never lets me say that I'm a science fiction because I only have 1 science fiction book. So she says, you can't say that. I'm like, well, technically I can, because first of all, it's a genre, kind of. And but second of all, I do have 1 book. Okay.
That counts. Well. That counts.
It sounds well enough.
And I'm Robin. I'm the wife. And my role is to keep everything non-writing off Michael's plate so he can do a lot of writing. So I deal with the agents and the publishers, and I do the self-publishing, and I do everything else.
We need to come up with
Kickstarters.
WIFE means something completely different.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah,
something,
exactly.
Something more descriptive of the title.
That's true. So I do the way I like to think about it is I do the business side of writing, and he does the writing. And I also teach publishing and marketing to primarily self-published authors through various free classes I hold in the Washington, D.C. area.
Awesome. Yeah, all right. Awesome. And the reason why we're really talking, the reason why we'd be really excited to talk to you two today is I think out of all the authors that I kind of know, you two seem to have really nailed the process of launching fantastic Kickstarters for fantasy books. And you've worked out a system that has really worked well for that. I know, Dirk, you have learned a lot from them as well. Yeah. So I thought maybe we could just start before we get into sort of the Kickstarter tips and everything, how did you two decide to start, like, sort of dividing up the writing and the business side of things between the two of you? And when did that process sort of first begin?
So Micah tried writing for a long time and tried to get published traditionally, did a lot of, query letters and stuff. And he got disgusted with it and he gave up. And he got very, very gone with the wind. Is like, I will never write again, and he didn't for 10, 12 years, something like that. And then we were kind of in a transitional phase because we had started up an advertising agency and we got kind of bored with that. And I asked Mike, I said, well, what do you want to do? And he says, well, I'd like to go back to writing, but I don't want to publish because that way just leads to the dark side. So I said, okay, well, that's fine. I can bring in the money and you can go off and do your work. But when I read what he wrote, I said, look, these really have to get out there. And he said, well, I ain't doing it. And so I took on the responsibility of working with agents and we got an agent and she shopped it around and it went nowhere. And then I thought about self-publishing. And this was long before any of you guys were thinking about self-publishing. I mean, this is before ebooks. Hmm. And then I started down the path of self-publishing. And then this really small little publisher in the middle of nowhere decided that they would pick up the books. And that's kind of the first foray into publishing. And then ever since then, it's just required someone to do the business side. And Mike had no interest in it, nor did I want him away from writing. I wanted him to concentrate on the writing so that I had something to give to other people. So,
and the reason why she handled that question is because nefariously in the past, people have asked me, so how did you get into writing? And she's like, quicker. And I would talk for hours and hours. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Was this only a 2-hour podcast?
Yeah.
I was actually timing her to see how quickly she was able to get through that.
I did like 10 years in like 3 minutes.
You did good.
Yeah.
That was a pretty efficient summary.
We've all already realized that we all need a Robin.
You do. All of us. You do.
We all need a Robin.
Honest to God, you do. I mean, every time I do a lecture, people are like, can I hire you? And I'm like, no, because I have one rule, which is I will do a lot of things for people for free, but I will never, ever, ever take money from authors. It's just, I think there's too many people out there kind of preying on authors that.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever told you the story that when I was first starting out, I was approached by an agent and we were trying to get an agent.
An agent.
And they said, well, the only thing we have to ask you, even before reading your book or even a sample, only thing we need to know is, are you willing to go on the late shows, like the Tonight Show and the other talk shows? Because, some authors, they won't do that. And I need someone who's willing to do that. Are you that person?
and then the contract came in and it was a $1,000 a month fee or something. Yeah. It was crazy. Boy.
So ever since that, and I realized that every time I've talked to someone, they will do anything to get published. They will simply, we've had no people who spend like $20,000 for PR.
$30,000. Yeah.
And it's crazy. And I was like, that's not how you do this. It's like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But people will take advantage of people so quickly. So the one way I always differentiate is that if someone's asking you for money in return for help, don't get the help because it's probably not legit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I teach classes on how to write too, but I've never, and when I used to do a class for Writer's Digest, when I found out they were charging the people for my classes, I stopped doing it.
Yeah.
So, but I actually do it for free, but I don't.
Yeah.
Like
we do a lot of pro bono stuff. We've had, trying to pull it back to Kickstarters.
Yeah, at some point.
So Dirk has been out to our place and, we have authors out here. And every time I get near an author, I do talk to him about Kickstarters because I think,
it's a great way to go.
It really is a great way to go. Even more so now because of Sanderson. I think the best thing that Sanderson did is he really shone a spotlight on Kickstarters and literary projects because for a long time in the Kickstarter ecosystem, publishing was the little sleepy corner. Games were very big. You had some really big products that hit it out of the park, like the Pebble Watch and the Coolest Cooler and like the Umi stove and stuff. But, up until very recently, Michael had like the top, he had Like five of his Kickstarters were in the top 10 of all earning Kickstarters. Now he's been pushed down really far. And to be honest, I want him to be pushed down really far. I want more authors to come in and be more successful than Michael did. So now it's getting the attention it deserves. And I think that's because of Sanderson's Kickstarter. I think that's Absolutely. The biggest thing that he, you know, did that. But that said, I don't think you have to be, you know, a Sanderson to do well. I mean,
yeah, we couldn't get people to do Kickstarters when we first started. We talked with several.
Well, we were on Dirk for years.
Oh, I resisted for years because I was afraid of the amount of work. I didn't know if it would be successful. Yeah. And you know, honestly, you guys are like, I mean, on Reddit for years, you guys have been like some of the most supportive people, if not the most supportive people for self-pubs that I definitely are that I know of. I mean, I've actually asked myself, why are they being so helpful? Why are they being so nice?
You're not the first person. She used to go to do. Okay. So when I couldn't get published through the big publishers and we went around shopped at a small place and they still couldn't get published, she decided she was going to self-pub, and this is before ebooks, so we were going to print up our own books and sell them literally out of the trunk of the car. That's how hardcore we were getting. Mm-hmm. Just as we got it done, we got 300 books printed, we had them all set to go, and then we found an email from this company in Minnesota who was going to publish my first book, and we went, oh crap, no. I guess we should check our email occasionally. So when that happened, she had all this knowledge about how to self-publish, and she didn't have anything to do with it anymore. She's like, oh, well, that's quite a letdown. So she decided to go to the local the library and start meetup. And teaching people how to do it. And she would invariably go to these classes, and she would teach people for an hour or two, and she would have like 20, 30 people in the class. And when she got done, they're like, this is fantastic. But they'd all come up and ask the same damn question.
Why are you doing this?
Where do you get the money out of this? And she's like,
there's no money, but I've learned a lot. And if I can get that information into other people's hands, then I've done some good in the world. And that's really what it's about, you know, is I my brain, before it starts leaking out my ears, I just have a lot of information, and I, you know, if I can help people with it, I want to, because
we have a bookshelf downstairs that is devoted to the people who have gotten their books published that we've had at least something to do with.
Yeah.
So, and Dirk's on there.
Yeah.
Dirk has his up.
Yeah.
And it's an honor. And I would not be surprised at all if you, there's no doubt that you guys helped lay the groundwork for what Sanderson did, but I wouldn't be surprised.
We did.
If he or at least his people were very aware of what you guys were doing.
He said, oh, yeah. No, he said it. He said it.
Oh, he did.
Said, like,
oh,
yeah, yeah. When he was doing his Kickstarter, he recognized us as like, you know, he said something along the lines, you know, like, I'm not the first to do this. Michael Sullivan has been out there doing it for years and he's doing a very good job with it and so forth. Yeah. I mean, we got to take that clip somewhere and like,
what's funny, have it. Because it's with Brandon. I was on a panel with him at Kineticon, and we actually had a debate over self-pub versus traditional. But what was really interesting was that we gave him one of our books. He was signing just to the left of me, and I was signing here, and everyone was walking in front of me. And I would like, I had a whole pile of free books that was given, and I had a handler. Does anyone know what that is? Because I didn't. But he's sitting there, and he's supposed to do whatever I want. He's my own personal slave. It was great. And people would come up. And they would look at my pile of books and they would say,
you're digressing.
I know, but it'll come back around. But
he said, this is fine. Keep going. I'm enjoying the story.
Yeah.
And I said, can we buy the books? I said, no, you can't, because they were free. But I didn't tell them that. And the guy thought I was crazy. And so eventually they did start coming over, and it was like this little secret. And they started, everyone in his line got my book. So they went up to Brandon Sanderson's place. And at the end, I saved one book because I knew my plan was going to work. And it did, because they actually got done signing. He walked away. He goes, all right, give me one of your damn books, because everyone else, every single person has this book. So I gave it to him. And then, I don't know, a year or two later went by and we saw.
Yeah. So he was doing one of his classes and he was talking about self-publishing. And he's in this class. He says, know, and there's that guy, you know, that guy, that I read his book. His book was really good. What was his name again? He's talking to his other guy in class. He's like, you know, is that book? It's got the two guys in it. I'm like, it's Michael J. Sullivan! Say it. And then he finally came up with it, you know.
So I assumed that he couldn't even remember who I was, which is probably the case, but he did have the book. But then I saw another post where he endorsed me in a bookstore. It says books by recommended by Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah, books recommended by Brandon Sanderson.
And the book was there.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's and huge. Then he made a comment about the Kickstarter. And then also recently he said something about me being a good writer, which I'm like, he's like the only writer who I know who's actually apparently read me.
Right.
But I can't even verify he did, but it's just weird.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That is
incredible. If he said he read it, I believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to apologize. Any segue about Brandon Sanderson is a segue that I wholeheartedly endorse upon this show.
Our brush with
he is my favorite author.
Our brush with greatness.
Jed's a bit of a Sanderson fanboy.
Yeah, you can probably see like all of his books behind you right up here.
Who just hates him.
So I'm going to try and drag it back to Kickstarters again.
Yes, please do. That'd be fantastic.
Because here's the thing that I think is the thing about Kickstarter is that everyone is missing, and particularly Brandon Sanderson's Kickstarter. Because, you know, like everyone's like, oh, my God, you know, he made so much money. And, oh, you know, his biggest Kickstarter ever, $42 million, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not what's important. What's important is Brandon Sanderson now is in possession of 185,000 readers' emails.
Yep.
That he knows buys his books, right?
Yep.
And if Sanderson does another traditional publishing deal ever, I don't know why he would, because all he has to do, you know, I mean, the amount you get by selling direct versus selling through the bookstores, and just the freedom to be able to do whatever you want.
Well, there's a security involved that he can't have his business taken away unless they shut down the internet entirely.
Right. You know, Amazon.
The argument or would be convenience. Now, he has people doing this.
Yes, he does.
And if that experiment doesn't work out for him, I could see him going back to
But he's had this team for a long time.
Yeah, I know, but this is the first time they've done a thing of the scale, I think.
Well, it's the first time anyone's done it at the scale. But the thing with Kickstarters is, and you know, some of the points I want to make about Kickstarters is we don't do Kickstarters for money. Like most people do Kickstarters for money, right? Like most self-published authors are like, I don't have the money for a print run, so I'm going to do a Kickstarter. And sometimes it's like for the cover design and the editing and all that. We don't need Kickstarters for that, but we run Kickstarters because one of the things I'm a big proponent of is to remove as many middlemen between the author and the reader, because the author and the reader are the only two people who are necessary in this whole equation of the writing business.
Well, narrator. Don't forget narrator.
Well, a narrator. Yes, I'll never forget them. And, you know, we all self-published, well, not we, because we do Kickstarters, but most self-published authors are in constant fear of what happens if Amazon changes things, right? Like if they kick me off the platform or if they change their royalty rates. I mean, we were on Amazon back in the days when the royalty rate was 35%, right? When they told us that they were going up to 70%, I was like, oh my God, they're going to 75%. I mean, they could, you know, and I'm not an Amazon phobic person. You know, I know Amazon made us lots of money. I love Amazon. But the fact of the matter is when you have that direct connection with your readers.
Yes.
Then you are set for life. As long as you keep producing stuff that they like, and as long as you have a way to reach them, you don't ever have to worry about anyone else. And I just don't like, I mean, talk about independent. I'm a real independent. Like you know, we sell a tremendous amount of books direct to consumers. And the other thing about Kickstarters is the Kickstarter community is just very enthusiastic. And one of the things that comes about by doing a Kickstarter is they really feel that they have, it's kind of like Patreon in some respects, but even better than Patreon, because they feel responsible. They feel like they helped to bring this thing into being, which they have. I mean, their money helped to allow us to do things that we wouldn't normally be able to do. You know, in our most recent Kickstarter, for years, I've wanted hub spines on my you know, faux leather cockpit. Hub spines are really expensive.
Yeah, what does that look like?
There are these little bumps.
Yeah, they stick out.
That like in the old-timey books, they used to have these bumps when they bound them.
They look beautiful.
And hub spines cost like, it's like $10 added on top of a book. You know, like, so if your book's printing for $2, you just bumped it up to $12, right? And, you know, no publisher in the world would ever give me hub spines. They just wouldn't. It's just, there's only one binder in the entire United States who can do hub spines.
Yep.
They're very complicated. They're very expensive. But through Kickstarters, we can literally do whatever we want. When you got to get another prop. I want the slipcase for Legends of the First Empire. Right, way downstairs.
Oh, you mean like the one I have on my shelf over
there
here?
You go.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Hey, nice work, Derek.
Yeah. So I really wanted slipcases, right? And to make up a single slipcase, it's rather expensive to do. And I said, well, you know, I want a slipcase for these books. Yeah, here he comes. This monster of a beast.
So for people just listening on the podcast feed, feel free to head over to the YouTube channel to see the video version of this.
Yeah. So I wanted to make these slipcases, right? So I was like, well, let me just run a Kickstarter to see like whether other people would like slipcases, because then I could do a production run as opposed to doing a one-off. And we did like 1,500 of them. And then since then, we've done 3 additional printings of it. So they keep selling. And, it allows me to get something that I wouldn't normally be able to. I wanted to do posters. You know, I want a poster on my wall. But again, printing up one poster, nowadays you can actually get it better. But at the time, you really couldn't do one poster. You needed to do like 100 posters. So I was like, well, part of the Kickstarter, I'll do posters. And that way I can have a poster for my wall and my readers can have a poster for them. So, you know, Kickstarters allow you to make things that you would probably not necessarily make if you didn't have Kickstarters. The people get very enthusiastic around it. And then for one of the things that we do, which is a little bit harder for the self-published authors because, man, you guys work at the speed of light. But one of the things that we do is we have really long release cycles. So it does allow us to get the books in the hands of people long before it hits the shelves. And what that does is allows us to get like a lot of reviews on Goodreads before. And
usually positive just because they are backing the thing. So
right.
And they're usually true. It helps.
And then when the book finally does come available on Amazon, a lot of people will copy and paste their reviews. So we get a lot of Amazon reviews like on day one, because the people actually got the books 3 months before the release and they've already read them. And there's also kind of this exclusivity type thing, you know, like, you know, I'm reading the latest Michael J. Sullivan book and you guys can't because it's not available anywhere else in the world.
No.
But then outside of all that, you then have the emails of all those people. I just recently did a quiet Kickstarter. It's not an official Kickstarter. I'm doing a private imitation event for our fans. And I took people who had like done our Kickstarters before, and I didn't want to do a true Kickstarter because this thing that I'm selling is very limited in the number of quantity. And because of that, if I had done a Kickstarter, it's really like who got there first, right? It's like, you know, whoever clicked the button first. And the most ardent of fans would be locked out. So what I did is I literally hand invited like our kind of our top fans, the people who've been very supportive of us, let them get in, made sure that they were either able to say yes or no, and then, you know, let some other people in and over a period of time. So in doing that, I kind of compiled my list of emails that were just from Kickstart backers. And that list is over 25,000 people.
Whoa.
You know?
Now, correct me, maybe mention this and I didn't hear you. But one of the things we also discovered when we did our first Kickstarter was the fact that when we...
When we
put out Hollow World, which is the first one we did, we were shocked that most of the people who backed it
never heard of Michael.
So most people presume that you're doing this for the money, and it's not. When she said she began this by saying we're not doing it for the money, it's actually a promotional thing because people who are on Kickstarter are people who are on Kickstarter. They're just back projects. So you have a whole new reservoir of potential readers sitting there waiting for you. So if you just do a Kickstarter, you can get funded merely by the base of Kickstarter. And then anyone else who you contact, and it spreads out. So you, it's almost like the difference of, it's not quite as good, but going from being traditionally or self-published to traditionally published, we saw our base of readership go up. And same thing happened with Kickstarter. You also hit, you tap a whole new area. Now, if I were to get my books made into a movie, that again would expand that further. So when you're writing and you're looking for larger audiences, you want to go into new ecosystems. And one of them would be Kickstarter. One of them would be movies. One of them would be, you know,
audio.
And these, every time you get into a new ecosystem, because there are people who can't read. They only listen to books. So being in audio will probably double, if not triple, your reader base.
Yeah.
And every time you do that, when you put out a new book, that book is going to sell 2-3 times more. And you'll probably have some drop off when people read your book and they don't like it. But it more than makes up for it when you go into the larger ecosystem. So Kickstarter is one of those things.
Yeah. The reason we got into Kickstarter is kind of interesting. So we were out to dinner with a traditionally published author, a very mid-listy traditionally published author, and he had written a series and his agent tried to sell it and they got some offers, but the offers were terrible and the author wouldn't debase himself to take those offers, which I applaud him for. But he decided to put it in a drawer. And I said, well, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you self-publish? And he's like, well, I really don't have the money to self-publish. You know, I live book to book. You know, if I were to self-publish, I want to do it right. And that means hiring an editor and a good cover designer and, you know, doing all this stuff. And I don't have the cash for that. I said, well, why don't you run a Kickstarter? You have a fan base. You might as well do a Kickstarter, you know? And he said, oh, no, I don't think that will work. And when I have an idea and someone tells me, I don't think it will work, I have to prove them wrong. So our first Kickstarter was merely to...
We should have bet money is what we should have
we
done.
We should have done. Yeah. So it was really to show him that it would work. And I did.
It's a bad idea to bet against her.
Yeah. Yeah. It's even worse
to bet against the two of us.
Yeah.
We had a friend one time. We started an advertising agency. And when I took my hiatus from writing, and a friend of ours found out that we were starting an advertising agency. And this is a guy who used to work at Bell Labs. I mean, he was a certified genius.
Yeah, he was very smart.
And he's like, I want to invest in this company. We went, oh no, we're not taking people's money because this is the first time we ever started a business. It's probably going to fail us. No. He goes, you guys are a sure bet. I want to put money into this. We didn't let him, but
yeah, we didn't let him, but
we actually did really well.
We did do really well in that business. But anyways, so Kickstarters is a new ecosystem. You get access to the email addresses, which just is amazing. And the other thing is I'm all about, you know, one of the reasons why we don't traditionally publish anymore is the amount of money that other people take from Michael's work is so massive. And the crumbs that get left over by him is so minor. When you do Kickstarters, you've taken the distribution chain out of the equation. That's a huge amount. I mean, they take more than 50% right off the top. You take the publishers out, you take the agents out, you take everyone out, and Kickstarter's fees, it's only 5%. So, you know, if you sell a hardcover book for $30, which is a perfectly reasonable amount to do a hardcover book for, costs you $2.50 to print, you pay, you know, $1.50 to Kickstarter, that means you get like $25 of a $30 purchase going into your pocket, right? Yeah. And readers like to support the writers they like. I mean, they don't want you guys making pennies. They really like the fact that more of their money comes to you. And Kickstarters really enable that. There is one other thing about Kickstarters that I should mention. And Dirk, I'm going to be on you for your next one because you haven't done this yet. And that is that the Kickstarter itself is not the only money that is involved with the Kickstarter. Because if you use products like BackerKit or PledgeBox, what you can do is even after the Kickstarter is over, because there are people that are like, oh, I missed the Kickstarter. I'm really bummed. But if you use these products, it allows you to open a pre-order store where people can continue to back the project after the Kickstarter is over. So like on our most recent Fairlane Kickstarter, we raised just over $200,000. But another $35,000 came in just for people after the fact. And we also, by we, I don't mean Mike, because he doesn't do nothing. But me, me and my son ran a Kickstarter for Will White. And he brought in, what was it, Dirk? It was over 700,000. Dirk and I were at dinner together as his Kickstarter ended. And he did over 700,000. But another $92,000 has come in on the back end from people after the fact. Wow. So, you know,
it's worthwhile.
It's worth doing that, you know, and then if you aren't currently selling direct to readers, which a lot of authors don't do, because I know it's a huge hassle, right? You get like one order a week and you got to package it up and you got to take it to the book, you know, to the post office, and a big pain in the ass. But if you could leave that store open or use that as your online store, so you could continue to sell, you know, books without having to set up something very complicated on your website. Now we have, you know, an entire like system for this. You know, I bought a.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What were we calling it? The annex?
Yeah.
So the annex is my warehouse. It used to be a church. It doesn't look anything
church.
Like a church now.
And it's church. Amazing.
Yeah. It doesn't look like a church
I can't
anymore.
I can't wait to see.
Oh, you got to come out. Like.
We can't wait to see either. This has been a long project.
So AC Cobble is coming to the church as soon as we can get his books off the print, because he's actually going to sign. He did a Kickstarter that we helped him out with. And so he's coming to sign. So it's going to be really cool, because he'll get to sleep in the annex. And then he can go down to the basement of the annex and sign all his books.
So just to explain, it was a church. So ever since then, we called it the church. And it was really awkward. It's like, where's Robin? Oh, she's at the church. I'm like, really?
I didn't know she was that religious.
Yeah, and so it got to be a little awkward. So she wanted to change the name, and the first thing that popped into her head apparently was Annex. And we're going to change that at some point, I'm sure, but it works for now.
Name.
The Annex.
The Annex.
Right. How about the shrine to Sullivan's books?
Nah, yes.
The Love Shack.
We kind of figured it was, you know, I'm starting my own religion now.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a nice podium. We could put my book up on it.
The Sullivan Religion of Kickstarter.
Today we're reading a scripture from the opening book of Theft of Swords.
No, we're teaching why people need to do Kickstarters.
I just call it the Love Shack.
We're going to stop talking and let you guys talk for a second.
Yeah. So now you guys throw questions at us about Kickstarters.
I love this.
Throw questions
at us about Kickstarters. Starters. Yeah, this is incredible. Dirk, you go first.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, I've done three Kickstarters with, you know, of course, thanks to these guys for helping me out, getting going with those. And mine are small, tiny, compared to even Mike and Robin's.
And ours is tiny compared
to Sanderson.
White.
Or Will White.
And Will White is small compared to Sanderson. Yeah.
And so because mine is smaller, I order 500 books, right?
Mm-hmm.
I ordered 500 with mine, but you guys order how many? 20,000?
No, 10,000.
10,000? So even though I make less, and I pay more for the books than $250. It's not all that much more.
No.
Right. And they still worked out really, really well for me.
Right.
So and people are also doing audiobooks now, you know, so they can produce them themselves and keep all the rights. They'll go in and do a Kickstarter for audiobooks, but they'll produce it outside of like ACX so that they can then deliver them.
Yes.
Once they're done to the people who backed them. And then once they do that, then they can get it up on Audible. through ACX.
Exactly.
So yeah, all kinds of great things are getting done.
Even
on a very small scale, you know, people just 2,500, 3,000 is all they really need to do something, and they're getting it, you know.
Well, and one other thing that I should mention, it kind of goes into Kickstarters. And the other thing I'm going to be on you, Dirk, because
this is the Attack Dirk Show.
This is the Robin, this is the Robin soapbox thing. So I do want to encourage authors to sell more direct, you know, and Kickstarters is certainly a big part of that. But, you know, I just tallied up again, because I was doing some statistics for some other stuff. But like I tallied up like how many books, you know, how much money have we made so far this year just selling books from our annex directly to our consumers, right? Directly to our readers, where people buying books directly from us. And it's over $70,000. And all of those books are have a zero cost because the Kickstarter funded the entire print run.
Paid for them.
So when I figured that money out, literally the only money that's coming out of my pocket for that is the 2.9% credit card processing fee. I'm making a lot.
I need to jump in here just in case people are watching this and they make the wrong conclusions, because people often do this. The idea of a Kickstarter is important to understand. Most people think that they are funding this project when in fact it's pre-ordering the book.
Yep. Well, no, they think they're giving charity to the author.
Yes, exactly.
Or giving, you know.
They think, you know, they're just giving to you and hoping that you will do something with it, but that's not the case. And with most authors, it is simply pre-ordering the book, which is exactly what happens when book authors get advances. So, except in this case, you're using that money to produce the book.
Right.
But they are not giving money that they're not getting something for. Every cent that they give is buying something.
Yeah.
And therefore, it is not a charitable case, which much people think Kickstarters and
when Sanderson was doing his Kickstarter, a lot of people were like saying things like, you know, why should I give money to this multimillionaire?
Right.
It's like, well, you're not giving money.
You're buying a book.
You're purchasing a product. Yeah. The requirement of Kickstarter is you have to produce something. You can't just do a Kickstarter, you know, to get money. You have to, it's an exchange for something.
So,
and in fact, it has to be something new. Because at one time I wanted to run a Kickstarter. We had one of our publishers had put one of our books out of print. And the publisher said, before we take these books and pulp them, are you interested in buying them? I'm like, heck yeah, you know, because I know I'll sell them eventually. And so I want to do a Kickstarter for people to buy copies of that book, but I couldn't because it was something that was already made.
Yep,
right.
So you have to make something new. Now, that can be a reprinting of a book that you have released years ago. It could be taking a book you released years ago that was only in ebooks and making a paperback. It could be taking a paperback and making a hardcover. It could be taking a hardcover and making a faux leather version of the hardcover.
A special edition.
Or it can be as simple as doing a slipcase. I mean, we earned over $100,000 just doing slipcases. Now, that slipcase project, we did not make the $100,000 only on slipcases, because the beauty of it was a lot of people saw the Kickstarter. They didn't have any of the other books, so they could buy the slipcase and all six books.
Yep.
Or for people who had three of the books, it gave them an incentive for buying books 4, 5, and 6, because then they could get the slipcase for the whole thing. So, you know, a large number of those orders. I mean, we had some orders, obviously, that were just slipcases. And I didn't run the statistics, so I don't know exactly how it broke down. But a lot of those were books plus slipcase. So that, you know, that got more physical books sold too, because we did that as part of it. And like AC Cobble's most recent Kickstarter, one of his reward levels, his top reward level, was to get a paperback of every single book he had published before. So he had a really high level tier. It was several hundred dollars. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he got a substantial number of those. And in fact, the number was so great that I have, I don't know, over 2,000 pounds of his backlist sitting in the annex waiting for him to come sign, because those were all sold through the Kickstarter in addition to the new book that he was releasing as part of his Kickstarter. So not only did he get people getting the new book in his series, but they also were buying his backlist.
Yeah, people like Cliff.
And I have, you know, I have a number of orders where I'm literally shipping 17 books to people.
To one person. Bought,
You know, because they bought everything.
But to make a point here is that Kickstarters function in the same way that advances function for traditionally published authors. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if not everyone here understands how publishing works, the publisher gives you, not, I'm not talking about you guys, of course, I'm talking about viewers. but when you go traditional, they give you money up front. And it's usually not that much, but let's say you did a 3-book deal and you got a pretty good one, you might get $20,000 if you were doing really well. And that's what you get up front to write those 3 books. And you live off that money, presumably, until you get those books done. And then in a perfect world, you start making royalties and then you can start the next books. But unfortunately, what actually happens is you'll blow through that money in a year or two because surprisingly enough, $20,000 is not enough to live on for 3 years, because that's how long it usually takes for most traditional published writers to write a book. Not sure exactly why, but yes. So for 3 books to get that done, you're going to be living on the street apparently for the last couple of years. But with Kickstarter, it's the same thing. You get your advance and you get to live off that money while you produce the book. Now, that's generally not how I would suggest you do it. No. It's much better to have the book done and then seek that and then start your next book while you're working on it. But obviously, this is the exact same methodology, and it is available to independent authors through Kickstarter, where you can actually get that money funded up front. So you're not on the line for the money because you know exactly how many books people want. You can print up to that. You'll probably want a little more because you have the backer kit. But the idea is you're not on the line for, like we did, printing up 300 books, and we don't know if we're going to sell any of them. In fact, I don't think we did. So that's what's really good about it. It's an insurance policy that makes sure that you don't overproduce, which is great.
And the other thing is, and I can't believe that I can't get this one author to commit to this. There's a very famous science fiction author who I've been trying to get to do a Kickstarter. And he was very excited about it for a long time, but he wanted to do action figures of his characters, which is very expensive and very hard to produce. And I was like, no, stick to the books. You know, like the people want the books and so forth. And he won't do the Kickstarter without the action figures because he thinks he needs both. But that's neither here nor there. But the point is, he says, well, I just don't think people would be interested in just the books. But the beauty of Kickstarter is you know whether they are or not. I mean, you set your goal. And if you don't reach your goal,
you're not out anything.
You're not out anything.
Yep.
They don't get charged. You don't. All you lose is that little bit of time it took you to set up the Kickstarter.
When we first started,
and it allows you to see whether, like this whole thing with the slipcase, I didn't know whether that had any legs or not. I didn't know if anyone other than me would be interested in, you know, hub spined versions of our books. I didn't know if anyone would be interested in us, you know, paying $35 for a slipcase. So you do the Kickstarter, and if it turns out no one's interested, what are you out? You're out a few hours that it took you to set it up.
The ideal entrepreneurship when you're starting a business is a business in which you risk nothing, but you gain possible wonderful rewards.
Right.
And when we started my advertising agency, I already had a computer and that's all I needed. She brought me clients and I worked using programs I already had. It didn't cost me anything. If I failed, we weren't out any money. So when you're doing this, the same concept, if you don't risk anything, but you can start a business on it.
Why wouldn't you?
What's the downside?
Yeah. Now there is a downside, and the downside is that if you don't have a Robin,
I was going to say that,
or if you don't have a lot of kids, it is going to take time away from your writing. I mean, that
this is the question I have to ask you.
What?
So one of the things all the readers or viewers out there are thinking to themselves, yeah, this sounds great, but what if I get 100,000 people buying my books? How do I get those out the door to them? I don't want to sit there and put them in envelopes and mail them out. So please answer that question for all these wonderful people.
Okay. So there are tons and tons and tons of fulfillment companies where they, you know, first of all, you should, you know, when you price your product, you should have shipping on there, and you need to account for overseas shipping, which can be very expensive, right, Dirk? there are fulfillment companies that will do this for you, that, you know, you could have the books printed and sent directly to another company. And all you do is you export out of your Kickstarter, well, actually, you would use PledgeBox or BackerKit, but you export their information, you send it to them, and they will mail them for you. So you don't have to ship them. Now, of course, they take a little bit of money, right? That's what they do. I used to have a fulfillment company. I had a fulfillment company, and they did both my Kickstarter shipping and then my daily orders, you know, like how I told you to sell directly to consumers. And they did that. So there are plenty of companies out there that will do that. What's really cool about Kickstarters as opposed to the daily orders is most of these fulfillment houses will charge you warehousing fees, right? Like you're taking up room in their warehouse. They have to accommodate for that. So, you know, they're going to charge you, you know, like if you had a pallet of books sitting, I think my fulfillment company, if I had a pallet of books sitting in their warehouse, it cost me $9 a month. And if you're not selling a lot, you know, that's an overhead that you have to do. But the cool thing about Kickstarters is you send all this stuff to the fulfillment partner and it's gone at the end of the Kickstarter, right? You send them some extras because there might be damages or things that get lost in the mail. But when the Kickstarter is over, you just have them ship back to you whatever was left over. And then you don't have those warehousing fees. And they're very happy to do that because...
So how would you find a fulfillment?
Well, Kickstarter itself is partnered with a lot of companies. There's a company called Flowship. There's a company called ShipBob. I mean, there's so many of them. We don't use them. The company I used was called Box In, Box Out. And the reason why I use Box In, Box Out is they are a fulfillment company in rural Virginia, literally 30 miles from my house. And it was providing living in rural Virginia, there is a need for jobs. You know, it is not an area that is
right. It's a small business.
Yeah, a very small business. Really small business. I think there was like five people working there or something.
So
like
they
that.
Were very happy to have the work.
Yeah. So we used that as a fulfillment company because it was a community. It was a business in our community that, you know, was hiring people from our community. The only reason why we stopped using them was they eventually ended up getting rid of their warehouse and they started renting out space within a really large company's warehouse called Plow and Hearth. I don't know if anyone knows who Plow and Hearth
is. I'm surprised you actually pulled that one out. I couldn't think of it.
I know. but that made it really difficult for us to work with them because Mike signs his books. So getting into the Plow and Hearth warehouse was like getting into Fort Knox.
Yeah, we had to have a lot of security.
A lot of security. And,
of course, during COVID, it was a real nightmare because...
Yeah, I mean, during COVID, it was even worse.
It was like under lockdown.
Yeah. So, and that's when the annex came for sale. And I thought, well... And I had paid over a period of like 3 years, I had paid, this shows you how many books that we sold, right? So over a period of 3 years using them, I think they probably made about $80,000 off of me and they were making like $2 a book from me.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, it was great having them do it because I didn't have to do anything, but I'm transitioning a lot of what I used to do over to my children, and now my children are quitting their day jobs, and you know they're working at the annex, and they're running Kickstarters, and they're doing stuff.
So
like
bottom
that.
Line so, is, if you do everything that we did, you will too will create generational wealth.
Nice.
Okay, so that's the end of part one. Like I said, part two comes out next week. So if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe and hit that notification bell so that you will be notified immediately when the episode releases next Monday. I super enjoyed this discussion, and the second half just gets even better. So I'll see you then. In the meantime, you might enjoy this video about a author who ran a $500,000 Kickstarter campaign for a book about the history of text adventures. The link to that is also in the show notes down below. I'll see you in the next video.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.